The Inner Mind Podcast with Peter Nardi and Mark Spellman.
Right, hi guys, welcome to the very first Inner Mind Podcast. You're here with Peter Nardi and my good buddy Mark Spellman. How you doing, Mark?
I'm doing very well, Peter. How are you?
I'm very well. Now, I will say we're on lockdown at the moment, so you are on the phone. You're not here yep. with me. So if no. it sounds like you're on a phone, that's because you're on a phone.
I'm on a phone.
You are on a phone. But I wanted to tell everyone, like, because we've been friends for a very long time, and this is our first podcast. We've done various other things together. So anyone in the magic community will know that we've worked together for quite a long time. But we decided to do a podcast because we used to try and get together every single month. Since the last time I saw you, we'll get onto this in a moment, was the final of BGT last year. But because we haven't been able to get together and then the lockdown happened, we decided, because we do like to try and talk or whatever once a week or once every couple of weeks, we thought if we decided to do a podcast, then that would force us to spend the time to actually sit here and talk, because we always want to, but time as it is, we're always doing other things. So this is our time together. So we might ramble on about stuff and we might get quite sort of excited or emotional or whatever about other stuff, because we are just going to be chatting. So it is going to be like a no holds barred conversation.
Absolutely. Also, as well, to point out that I think it's fair to say that we've known each other a long time. And for those of you, obviously people are very familiar with us from, especially in the magical community, from early days with Alakazam doing the DVD sets, the Chapters of Mark Spellman, which was in 2004. My God, that makes me feel really old. And if you do have the Chapters of Mark Spellman, you'll see I literally am double the size widthways, having been in lockdown. So
you were very small back then. You were really skinny.
You know what? I really was.
I know.
And but also as well, just to point out for the people that do have the DVD set, it's worth pointing out, and I think we discussed this before, but we are going to get onto this in a second. But let's just keep with the how we met first, right, and then bring it up in chronological order. So, obviously, people will know me and Peter from Alakazam. Obviously, Peter Nardi is Alakazam, but we met when Alakazam literally was a shelf or a box, rather, wasn't it? It was a box.
Yeah, a little box in my bedroom.
A little box in his bedroom, and that was Alakazam magic. And obviously, anybody listening to this that knows Alakazam knows that little box has now become a much bigger box.
Yeah.
I think it's three boxes now.
Three
big boxes down in Ashford with loads of stuff in it. So, but Peter and I sort of started out my early magic days. Initially were just as a hobby and that kind of thing. Peter, question.
Yes.
Let me ask you this question.
Yeah.
How did you, can then ask me the question, and that okay. would sort of do this nicely. How did you get into magic? What happened?
Right. I actually don't know.
Can I just say really quickly?
Yeah.
I genuinely don't know the answer to this.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know how I got into it, but I remember being into it when I was really young. And I mean really young. As far as I can remember back, I loved magic. I used to watch David Nixon on telly. Anytime there was a magician on telly, I used to watch it. And I used to try and perform magic tricks. My mum says when I was like 3 or 4, I would, you know, try and perform magic tricks. I just loved it. And then I just started doing it. I went out and bought some magic tricks, or my mum bought me some magic tricks. So I used to put on little shows for the family. One of my friends started getting into it. So we used to go down to, there was a Beatty's, which was a model shop in town.
I remember Beatty's.
Yeah.
My God.
And they used to do the Paul Daniels magic sets, or not the sets, but the actual separate tricks. So I used to go down every Saturday with my pocket
money. I remember
that.
And you used to have the individual grading. And some of them were easy, like the pencil through glass, which I used to love that trick, was an easy one. but then you'd have like the multiplying billiard balls.
Yeah, and the sponge balls and everything else.
That was like an advanced level.
So we used to go there, and then I've still got an uncle that lives in Germany, and at the time, he owned a couple of restaurants in Germany, so he used to come over and visit us at Christmas. And he used to like going to Regent Street because he wore cashmere jumpers. So, you know, he was quite wealthy. So he used to take me down every Christmas and then take me into Hamley's, who had a big, you know, magic shop at the bottom. So I used to go there, buy stuff. So I was always into it. And then my mum found an article in the paper of someone giving magic lessons, and it was actually Jack Delvin, who was later the magic the president of the magic circle,
of course.
So I had lessons with him, and I used to demonstrate for Jack in Cheeseman's in Lewisham when I was about 10 years old. I used to demonstrate magic, and then I got out of it when I was about 12 because I was into BMXing and music and girls and everything else, and magic sort of and magic weren't really cool back then. When you were a teen, it wasn't a cool thing to do. And then when I was about 20, I started a job with a computer company, and one of the engineers there saw me doing a card trick. So even though I was out of magic, I was still doing card tricks and stuff like that. And he saw me doing a card trick, and he said, "Oh, let me show you something." And he'd done the most amazing sponge ball routine. And at the time, I'd only really done cards, so I didn't know what was happening. And then he said to me, I said, "Oh, you know, where'd you get your stuff?" And he said, "Davenport's." Now, the last time I went to Davenport's was when it was in Great Russell Street. And I thought they had shut and just gone forever. And he went, "No, they're in, you know, they're under Charing Cross Station." And as it so happened, I was a salesman in London. So that was it. So I started getting back into it. But yeah. That's sort of quite a long story, really. It should have been
No, that's all good. That's all good. I genuinely didn't know that that story. Similar in a way. I remember going into BT's and seeing the Paul Daniels magic sets. I remember all that. For me, it was a little bit different. I had a Paul Daniels magic set, but also I remember this vividly. Uri Geller being on TV, bending a spoon, talking to the screen, get items, get watches, get you know, whatever, you know, and we're going to try and do it through the screen. And I remember my dad, I was sitting on the floor and I picked up a teaspoon and I started rubbing this teaspoon. And I remember looking at my dad, I must have been, 7 or 8 years old, something like that. I was young, but I remember looking at my dad looking at me like, you know, like, when a father looks at his son with such disappointment, it's like, "Oh, you silly boy," you know. And suffice to say that I rubbed the spoon for quite a while, and I didn't manage to connect psychically with Uri Geller, but I had a fascination for that kind of magic. Yeah. So, you know, but alongside the magic sets and just learning out of this world and all of those kind of things, and going to the Beatty's magic shop. So similar in a way. And likewise, actually, I kind of went to college and studied illustration and graphic design because, you know, how do you make money doing magic? No one in my family's in show business, so it didn't feel like a viable thing to do. And then suffice to say, I sort of went through college and stuff, and I met my first serious girlfriend was a girl called Christine, a young lady called Christine, and... and she actually said, I mentioned that I like magic. And then she went, "Oh, you like magic?" And the next time we met up, obviously we don't want to talk methods too much, but she did a Divano Rising card and vanished a silk handkerchief. And in that moment of me expecting something to be really rubbish, I actually went, "What? Hang on a minute. What did you just do?" And that was it. It literally was like the spark that reignited the fire. And then that was it. I got right into magic again, started sort of watching and recording every bit of magic I could. And I'd sort of done magic on and off, you know, throughout even college and stuff. You know the tricks, so you can pull out a couple of tricks, you know, a couple of cigarette things, because, you know, unfortunately, I used to smoke back in the day. And, you know, card stuff and, you know, whatever, you know, sort of like some of the sort of Out of This World was a popular one that I used to do, which is an amazing trick in itself. And then that was it. And then I kind of went to college, sort of left Magic alone. Then Christine reintroduced me to it. Then I went and saw Simon Drake's Secret Cabaret. Actually, I saw it on television first. My godmother phoned me up and said, "Mark, have you put Channel 4 on?" And I went, "Why, what's on?" She goes, "Honestly, put Channel 4 on. You'll love it. It's right up your street." And I put this program on, which was The Secret Cabaret with Simon Drake. And it was literally him just about to stick a knife through his arm, which he did. And then that was it. I was like, "Oh, that's unbelievable." Watched the whole series, recorded it, watched it back, you know, like on the old VHS, when you're rewinding it back, trying to get a good pause without that fluttering that fluttering screen. Like, you know, now on YouTube, you can run it at whatever, you know, speed you like and try and work out the magic tricks. But the old days, you had to press pause on the old Betamax or whatever and try and get a decent...
Like four frames a second.
Oh, God, it was awful, you know, trying to pause it. And then that was it. And then I went and saw his show at the Hackney Empire, started working with Simon Drake. Met him backstage. Christine wanted to get a couple of things signed, like a poster and stuff. And then it was a case of, I showed Christine some of my illustrations, because that's my background is illustration and graphic design.
Yeah.
And I showed her this book that I'd just compiled over years, which was just sketches of just different illusions, like how I thought things were done, like the Statue of Liberty with David Copperfield, just my own interpretation. How would I do that? And then that was it. Then Christine said, "Oh my God, you got some amazing ideas here. Why don't you send some of them to Simon Drake?" And I was like, "What, the guy off the TV that we just wanted to think, what are you talking about? How are you going to get my ideas to him?" And bless her, you know, she sort of said, "Look, let's take some photocopies," took photocopies, put them in an envelope, phoned up the Hackney Empire where we'd seen Simon Drake. And they said, "Oh, send it to us. We'll forward it to his management." And they did. And then literally, I think it was maybe 2 weeks later, because obviously this is all regular posts. There's no emails back then. And then lo and behold, I get this card come through the door in an envelope, and it's just Simon Drake's silhouette. And I sort of thought, "Oh my God, that's Simon's silhouette from his silhouette routine in the Secret Cabaret." Opened it up, and on the inside it said, "Thank you for sending through your letter. It was amazing, and your ideas are fantastic. Give me a call."
Wow.
And you know, in your mind, you're going, "Give me a call." And I remember in those days, you could phone up directory inquiries, give them the number and say, "Is that business or residential?" And I did that. I phoned up and I said, "Can you just tell me, is this a business or residential number?" They said, "Oh, that's a residential." And I thought, "Oh my God, that's Simon Drake's home phone number. You know, this is the guy I was watching on television, like sort of 2 months ago, shove a knife through his arm. And now I'm going to phone him up and talk to him on the phone." And we ended up having a sort of like 45-minute conversation about magic and stuff. And he invited me to come down. And bearing in mind, I've not performed any magic apart from just as a laugh, as a giggle at college and stuff. And he said, "Come down to the Hackney Empire. I'm doing another show. And if you want to help me out with it and stuff, then that, you know, you can." And I did. And then that was it. Ended up working with Simon for a long period of time.
Brilliant.
And I think I was, 19 at the time? About 20, actually. About 20, 21, I started working with Simon. Worked with him for 10 years, traveled the world, went everywhere, done amazing things. And because Simon's a stage magician, I ended up getting a lot of the close-up gigs. He'd just pass them on to me. "Mark, do you want to go out and do a close-up gig for Royal Bank of Scotland or NatWest or, you know, whoever?" And we did some gigs that were amazing. I mean, like, God, things like for the Sultan of Brunei, Barry White. We did George Harrison's house, the Beatle, George Harrison, may he rest in peace. Did a Halloween party at his house. It was just crazy. I met Dave Gilmour from Pink Floyd, you know, and managed to perform magic for him. And you just think to yourself, wow, you know, that's some serious... wouldn't be doing this if it wasn't for working alongside Simon. And then that was it. I just kind of found my niche. And I really like the mentalism and the close-up, but more so the mentalism. And then that was it. That's kind of how I got into it. And that was my journey in.
The thing is, well... It's sort of weird because the way we met was in Davenport. So for me, it was like a bit of a chance meeting because obviously I, I didn't even know Davenport still existed. And then I, you know, I got told one day, and I started, because I was working in London a lot, I was arranging my appointments so I could have my lunch hour in London. So what I would do is go into Davenport's, buy a trick, find a little cafe, and just sit there, have a sandwich, have a cuppa, and learn the trick, or read the magazine, or play with the cards I just bought, or something, whatever it was. I had to have something magic. And like all of us, you end up getting consumed by it. You literally want to live your life with magic. It sounds pretty weird, but you do.
No,
you,
it's not. Dream it's absolutely addictive. It's such an addictive. Listen, we both do a lot of magic. I know you do more magic now through Alakazam. I do loads of magic performing, or I did before this sort of situation, but you know, loads of magic. And you still, I think if you've got that desire for it, then you're always hungry, because I just see stuff all the time, and I know that I'm not going to use it, but I still want to see it and read it and learn it and whatever, you know.
That's it.
But you saying about Davenport's, just for the people listening, the way that we ended up meeting actually was when I was sort of kind of like, I was working with Simon and still finishing my sort of design courses. I did 6 years of design and graphic design. And I remember sort of just getting a part-time job in Davenport's, because I went into the magic shop like you, and you kind of just go, oh, it feels great in here. It feels like a real proper old dusty magic shop. And I remember just saying, you know, do you have any vacancies at all? And they said, well, we're looking for someone to do the post room. And I was like, yep, done. You know, because I was now not at college anymore. I just finished working with Simon. And obviously that's not a full-time job. That's as and when the gigs are coming in.
Yeah.
So started deming and doing a bit of postal work up at Davenport's, which was fantastic. Such a great place. You're centre of London. You know, I used to grab a book and go in at lunchtime. You know, actually, quite again, similar to what you just said, Betty would say to me, Mark, do you want to go and have your lunch? And I go, yeah, brilliant. And there was this place I used to go and get a toasted cheese and ham sandwich. I used to get a coffee. And then I used to go and sit right in the middle of Trafalgar Square on the steps. And I'd just sit there and read. Yeah. Like, Betty would say, take a book. I'd say, Betty, can I read this on my lunch? And she'd go, yeah, of course. And I'd sit and read books. And then that's where me and Peter met, for you guys listening. And that is that Peter was introduced to me by a young, the demonstrator at the time, Robert Pound, who now consults with Dynamo and does all this amazing stuff. He introduced us and said, you know, oh, you should speak to Peter. Peter gets loads of amazing things in. He gets sort of things that, you know, a lot of other people don't get. And and I remember I ordered the Steve Fearson fantastic flotation from you. And that was the first thing I ever bought off of Peter Nardi. And after 7 years of owning it, I never, ever made it up. And that's not to say it's a bad trick. It's more symbolic of my ability to actually get on with stuff than it is the quality of the trick. It's an amazing trick. But I remember you bought it in.
Yeah.
And we got chatting, and that was it. The beginning of a beautiful bromance.
Well, it sort of brings us on to your DVDs as well, because that's where I think we really sort of got pally, because I approached you to do a DVD set. And when
you actually approached me to do a DVD,
right?
It was a single DVD, because you'd done Andy Nyman's, because obviously this was your early ventures into DVD world, and you'd done Andy Nyman's Get Nyman, which was brilliant, like really amazing, like sort of, was it Get Carter kind of in style?
What's
the one with the minis? Is it the minis?
No, it was the minis is the Italian job, but Get Carter. It just so happened that we had a mini there, and Nyman thought it'd be cool to drive around in it, which the time was. But that was I was just a quick one about that, because your DVD was completely different, which I'll get into in a minute. But when we done Get Nyman, I was introduced to a guy called Rob Adrian, my designer. said, oh, I've got a mate who does filming, editing and everything else. So we got Rob in to do Get Nyman, which was great. I ended up buying two big Canon cameras to film it on. And we went down there. We had to hire lights. Rob said, don't worry, I've got it all sorted. So we're in Soho House, which is the actual, it was a screening room. So it's really small, but everyone was there. Like Darren Brown was there. You had Mark Paul there. You had Pete Furman, Ali Cook. So there was quite a few people there. But where we had ordered these lights, and I'm sure they were for a flipping stadium, right? So everything was whited out. It was so powerful. Poor old Andy was sweating like anything where they were so hot. But you know these old cameras, I mean, you had to have so much light for them to pick anything up. And unfortunately, you know, the footage, even though it's, you know, it's watchable and it's enjoyable, it's quite grainy because we were quite a distance back. So for your DVD, I actually hired in a proper crew that worked with the BBC. I mean, we're talking yes. big cameras, proper sound guys and everything else.
Oh, anyway, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, carry on.
So I think some people know, because we have done a couple of talks about the DVD set, but obviously Peter at this point has said to me, Mark, you know, we're friends, you know, I'm buying stuff off Peter and we just know each other. Peter did Get Nyman, loved it, bought the DVD off Peter, fantastic, really good. And then Peter says, Mark, you know, you come up with a lot of ideas and stuff. Would you be interested in doing a DVD with some of your routines on it? And I said, yeah, I never thought about it, but yeah, let's give it a go. So I wrote down different ideas, went through my catalogue, some of the routines I was actually doing at the time, some of the routines I'd done a couple of years before and kind of not done them since. And some of the ideas were things like, you know, this is something that, you know, I think would be amazing to do and really want to try it out. And I shared all this with Peter, and then Peter went, Mark, there's enough here for four DVDs easily.
Yeah.
Do you fancy doing four DVDs? And I remember going, I was so naive. I was like, yeah, whatever, you know, whatever, Pete, you know, and it was like, brilliant. Okay, let's do four DVDs. And then we sat down and we kind of thought, right, well, how long will it take?
Yeah.
To do.
That shows how amateur we actually were.
Yeah.
To sit there and go, okay, well, this trick's 4 minutes, this one's five. And we went, okay, it's 40 minutes, four DVDs, 4 hours, we'll be done. Or whatever we thought it was going to be.
Yeah. I think we planned it out. I think we honestly thought that we'd get in there at 9:30, set all the routines up, audience would come in at sort of 10:30. We'd start filming, and then almost like by sort of like mid-afternoon, 3 o'clock, something like that, we'll be done. We can wrap up, go to the bar and grab some dinner and head back to your place.
Yeah.
Yeah, right, whatever. It was four DVDs. They were all filmed in one. So our sort of naivety kind of, we tried to film four. Well, we did. We actually did film four DVDs in one day.
Yeah.
Now, when you consider now, if you were filming a single trick DVD and you were going out doing performances and getting the trailer together and all of that would be 1 to 2 days yeah. to do that. I've done it for Penguin Magic when I've gone over to Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah.
Yeah, and done it out there, and you know, and you just thinking back 2004, and just thinking that we'd do it that quickly was just is now we both know, having done many more DVD projects since.
Yeah.
Obviously, you've done hundreds of DVD projects since. You know, yeah, that's so not going to happen. But we started filming at about 10 o'clock with an audience. And that same audience stayed with us, most of them, up until I think we wrapped at about 12 midnight.
It was a hard, hard day.
That was so hard.
You know, for you, you were just up working, but even for the audience, bless them, if you've got the DVDs, you'll see that there's different audience members, because as soon as people were going, I've got to go and pick the kids up, mate. We had to start jiggling about the audience, bring the cameras in closer so it's still lookable. But yeah. The thing that I was just giggling a minute ago, and because I remembered, we filmed all the performances in the hotel. It was the Ashford International Hotel, but all the explanations we filmed in the production company's offices, which were beautiful. They were on a farm, weren't they? So
that's right. Yeah, lovely.
But it was one shot we wanted for the trailer, which was a shot you come up with, I think, where you wanted to walk really moody across this field. So literally Mark's walked about, I don't know, it's got to be sort of a quarter of a mile up. He was like a little dot, and we said walk down, so we were going to do this, you know, fast forward thing as he's walking. And just he gets to the bottom, this big rabbit just comes jumping in front of him, and he's had to walk all the way back and do it again, which was quite funny.
The rabbit shot, yeah, I remember that. But yeah, no, so that was our first big project together, and I think that's the first time where away from, like, you know, me, away from being magicians discussing magic, we in that time, because we had a lot of time together there. I think our personalities came through, and we just realized actually, this very, very similar sense of humor.
Yeah.
And outside of magic, we became friends, and magic brought us together. It sounds like a love thing going on here. Magic brought us together, but then the magic was between us just for real.
We did work together so much on those DVDs. We were speaking almost every day on the routines and everything else, and it was, you know, it was a great experience.
It was a challenge, and that's why if you watch them as well, I start off relatively fresh. But then by the end of it, literally when we're doing the close up, that's the stuff that was happening close to midnight. I'm really, really on autopilot. I am so on autopilot. And one of the other things people don't realize as well is some of those routines were routines that I performed sort of like 2 or 3 years ago and had not performed since. And you know, when you think to yourself, I used to do that in my cabaret set, sort of 2 years ago. I'll pull out the old props and blow the dust off and get on, and we'll do it again. But then, obviously, with you and Mark Elsden was there, you end up chatting and you kind of go, actually, but you know what? Change that bit and do that bit first. And, you know, obviously, in hindsight now, when you look at the DVDs, even I can look at them and kind of go, yeah, I'm really trying to remember which bit I'm supposed to be doing first here. So, but it was, I mean, it's funny, you know, because people still send me messages about those DVDs and they say, I use this routine and I use this routine. Now, in fairness, you know, in all honesty, I probably haven't done any of those routines in the context that they're in on those DVDs, probably for about the last maybe 4 or 5 years. I've got variations on them that I do because I love some of the themes, they're just really strong. But yeah, you know, so sometimes people are saying, Mark, you know, have you got any tips on how to do this? You mentioned on a lecture 2 years ago that you've changed an envelope or whatever.
Yeah.
And I have to almost look back at the DVD set. But every time I do, I go, God, that was filmed in a day.
Yeah.
Which is nuts.
And you cover sort of almost every facet of mentalism.
I've done every conceivable. If you look at the credit list at the end, I'm a real sucker. Peter's very good at crediting. I'm very sort of, I really feel the need to credit all of the people that have come before me, because, you know, far too often I think people don't in this industry, which I think is bad. And whether or not you kind of, you know, oh, I didn't know, well, I think you need to find out, really. You know, if you're doing a routine, then try your best to find out where it may have come from. It doesn't take a lot now, to be honest with you. You know, go on a forum or something like that and put a post up and you'll get information.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and 100%. And if you look at the credit list on the DVDs, you'll see there are so many credits on there for like Richard Osterlund, Mark Strivings, Larry Becker, Banachek, loads and loads of people on there who I massively, massively respect, and people I've been lucky enough to meet and converse with about this crazy world of mind reading and magic that we all know and love. But yeah, what an experience. And then that was it. That was our first beginnings. And then we went on to Inner Mind Productions. We enjoyed working with each other so much. And we did a couple of, I helped you out with a couple of releases for Alakazam. And then we joined forces to do Inner Mind Productions, which I think we, what did we have? Maybe what, 7 or 8 products that came out as Inner Mind, and something like that.
And it was always fun doing it. Oh, I mean,
yeah.
You know, we've had some really late nights, and I mean, the Assassin DVDs, people still talk to me about the Assassin DVDs we did.
Oh, and that was brilliant.
Oh,
and that was, and again, behind the scenes on that one, that was in the shop.
Yeah.
Because this was like, well, we're just doing an instructional DVD for the Assassin, so we're not going to go and hire a massive space. Let's just show the guys what it can do. And it was in the shop, you and I.
Yep.
And we were filming, I think, what, 2? I don't know what time it was in the morning.
It was late.
It was crazy late. And we had, we had bottles of Diet Coke and pizza. That was it. We were just sort of getting through on, you know, artificial sweeteners and loads of saturated fat to get through. But that is, I mean, Richard Bush of Peak Performances, I remember he sent you a message because we wanted to get a bit of clearance on a couple of things that we were doing for Inner Mind.
Yeah.
And he said to you, I love you guys so much. You're so funny. Your scripting is brilliant. And it was only when you replied and said, we don't script anything at all.
We waffle.
It literally is us just being twits in front of a camera.
Well, to be
fair, very sarky.
I think we were the first people, because this was the problem as well. One of the issues with, not an issue with your DVD, but I remember saying to you, Mark, you got to rein it in, because, you know, when we're selling these DVDs, especially in America, they won't understand the humor. You know, you got to rein it in a bit. And I think We were the first people on Magic DVDs that actually just let loose, you know, because everyone was trying to act prim and proper all the time.
Yeah.
And everything was so scripted and so delicate and so nice and elegant. And we just went for it and just spoke rubbish for a few hours, had a laugh.
Absolutely. Yeah. We did loads of things. So if you, anyone in Alakazam, of the Alakazam, sort of clients who have got, or actually don't have to be, they could have put it elsewhere, but the Extractor.
Yeah.
The Extractor DVD, the addition, the sort of companion DVDs for the Extractor.
Yeah.
And again, no methods here or anything like that. But there's a bit where I think we're talking and I've got 3 or 4 TTs.
Yeah.
Just because I thought it would be funny that I'm sitting there wearing 3 or 4 TTs, which, to if anyone listening to this is not a magician, they're going to be going, wearing 3 or 4 TTs, what's he talking about? But magicians will know what I'm talking about. And I just thought, yeah, well, why not? I'm gonna wear that. And also then we also all the stuff you see where Peter Nardi, the trailer that got so many people coming on, that trailer where you touch me on the forehead,
yeah,
and you sort of hypnotize me. None of that is planned. That's literally just me and Peter just doing stuff. And
I can remember you walking through Eastwell Manor, where, for anyone that doesn't know, it's a stately home. It's very posh. And Mark decides to walk up to reception with no trousers on to ask him if they've got a needle and cotton. And I'm sure in one of the, I don't know if it's a trailer or one of the explanations, you're sort of there and the camera's like on the top half and you're all suited and then it sort of pans down. You just got your pants on and your socks.
And then there was the Blair Witch bit as well, where I was in the corner. Do you remember where I was?
Yeah.
So anyway, sorry. But so that's kind of how me and Peter got together and how we got into magic and how this kind of friendship started, a lot of people do ask us, how do you guys meet? Hence telling you this. And then since then, yeah, like Peter says, you know, we've done a lot of projects together, so many projects together. And one of the things that that seems to work really well for us is that I will sometimes come up with an idea and I think that's it. I go, oh, that's it. Let me run it by, I run a lot of my material past two people. And that is you, Peter Nardi, and also Colin Klaus, who is known as Street Magic. And he's a really good friend of mine.
Yeah.
When I was on BGT as X, which is a whole nother topic, we can talk about that. Colin was pretending to be my manager and speaking to everyone, but we will get onto that properly later. But Peter's so good at just sort of going, what about if you substitute that for that? And it's amazing. And the same thing happens the other way around. Peter would say, Mark, I've got this new thing that I'm working on for Alakazam. I'm going to send you like a rough copy of it, or we FaceTime or Skype or whatever. And then, you know, just things grow from these routines. And I think it's a really important thing. We've spoken about this so many times, about never being precious. You know, be passionate, but don't be precious.
Yeah, 100%.
Because I think if you're passionate about a routine that you've designed, your passion should remain open, because it's like, you know, it's like something growing, you know, it's like a plant or something. It's like, you know, your baby, if you like, you know, you would always sort of advise, you should listen to every piece of advice that comes your way. You should act upon the advice that you feel is relevant, but listen to all of it.
Yeah.
Because sometimes the best advice you'll ever get might not be from where you think it should come from. So I've had great advice from you, Peter. I've had great advice from Colin. But then I'm one of these people that when I perform anything, especially in a social environment, and actually, do you know what? Even when I'm performing professionally, especially in a close-up sort of environment where it's a bit more, you know, less formal, you know, you're a bit more conversational, there are times when people, I'll do something and I'm so interested where I will actually say to the person, genuinely, I'm really, really, I'm so glad you enjoyed it. How do you think I did that? How do you think that came about? And the reason why I say that is because sometimes the answers you'll hear back will surprise you.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it will be very, very close, if not exactly what you were doing, or sometimes, rare, but sometimes it's actually better than what you're doing. And you'll go, oh my God, that is such a good way of doing it. I didn't do it that way, but I will next time. And that's a really important thing. And that's why this openness, you know, is really important. Just let every piece of it, no matter how old you are in this game, like as X, as Spellman, you know, whatever, I listen all the time. And I listen to non-magicians, magicians, hobbyists. I don't care. You know, I'm happy to discuss this crazy art with whoever, you know. So I think it's really important. And I think that's what's, you know, so we've got this, the sense of humor obviously ties us together, but the creativity and the lack of ego, if you like, we leave our egos at the door, because if we're having a discussion, I only want your routine. It's like with Colin as well. Same thing with Colin. Colin will phone me up and say, Mark, can we FaceTime? I want to show you a routine. And if ever I criticize him or maybe give him I never say negative feedback. Yeah. I always say it's constructive, you know, it's only to make you better.
Yeah,
and
that's, of course.
You know, and if we speak, I only want to make your product better. And likewise, if we speak about my act, you're going, how did it go? You know, and a lot of the time Pete will phone me after a gig and go, how did that bit go? Did it work? You're happy with it? You know, and that's a really important thing to have in this industry. And that we need more of that. I think there's a lot of, you know, less ego, you know, we're only at the end of the day, mentalist, you know, psychological magician, illusionist, whatever you want to call yourself, or, you know, close up magician or surrealist or whatever you claim to be, at the end of the day, if we strip it bare, we are doing trickery. We're using sleight of hand or sort of gimmicks or techniques that create this illusion of magic. And we should always remember that. And if we do that, then I think we'll be a little less, be a little bit more, you know, normal, if you like.
No, I agree. And Mark, do you know what? That brings us to the end of this week's podcast, right? Believe it or not, we have now spoke for 40 minutes. So
what?
I know. So that means next week on the podcast, we're going to be talking about the experience on BGT. So we're going to go over your first appearance, your second appearance, me with the boys. Also, we have got something that I really wanted to play tonight, and we're not going to play it, which is our first installment of Gigging Nightmares. I'm going to play the little intro to it just now.
Gigging
Nightmares.
Right, so Gigging Nightmares are stories that magicians have sent in, which is all about nightmares they've had while gigging, surprisingly enough. So we've got one of those next week. We've got the BGT talk. We're going to be discussing what we think of the magic on BGT this year. And we are going to be doing something else, which I've totally forgot about. But we're going to be doing loads on next week's one.
There's going to be loads. Just so the guys know, it's really important to mention this as well. And that is that we are going to cover things like, you know, for us, magic is everything. You know, whether it's on Britain's Got Talent, whether it's, you know, someone's new theatre show, whether it's things like Gigging Nightmares, which are really funny. I mean, I've got some. Peter, you've got some.
Oh, I have, yeah.
And by all accounts, by some of the lovely people that have contributed their stories, some of them are just like, you go, oh, my God, you know. So, there's some real horror stories out there. But as funny as they are, they're also lessons. There's a lesson behind some of these things as well.
100%.
So there's lots to talk about, you know. And also Peter and I will be doing things like where – you know, if I've watched a really amazing clip on YouTube, or there's been, and we'll kind of link it on the Facebook page and that kind of thing. But, you know, like an amazing piece of magic, or there's a book, or Peter's got a new product in, the real hype and buzz, or that kind of thing. Or I've sort of purchased something that's, you know, sort of super amazing. You know, regardless of where it comes from or who it's by, it doesn't matter. This is just about magic and mentalism and, you know, sort of me and Peter and, you know, and you guys. So hopefully that entices you to listen to the next episode.
That would be great.
It'd be lovely to have you there. Yeah.
And also for anyone that's interested, obviously we have got a Facebook page. It's Inner Mind, so you can check that out. Also, our podcast page is Anchor FM. So if you go on Anchor FM and search for Inner Mind or Inner Mind Podcast, you can actually leave a voice question for us. So you can actually record a question and we can play it on the show and answer it for you. The question can be to both of us, to me, to Mark, to X, whatever you want to do. It could be about BGT, could be about magic, could be just about us, whatever you want to do.
About life. It could be about life.
Could be anything. About life. That's the other thing we're going to chat and about is how this current situation, we believe, is going to affect magicians and the entertainment industry. So we'll try, that might not be next week, so I think we've got a lot to speak about next week, but certainly the week after we'll delve into that as well. So we're coming up to 45 minutes now, and we wanted to keep this down to a 40-minute podcast, so we're going to give you a couple of extra minutes, and then that's it. We will see you next week. So, Mark, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, mate. Always a pleasure, and thank you to everybody that's listening to this right now. Hope you enjoyed it, and this is like the intro episode, if you like, just to give you a bit of an insight if you don't know that much about me and Peter, and there'll be lots more to come, and thank you for tuning in.
Brilliant. Okay, guys, we will see you next week on the Inner Mind.
The Inner Mind Podcast with Peter Nardi
and Mark Spellman.